Thanks, John. Good evening or good afternoon, everybody. My name's Sanjay. I'm a grateful recovered addict, and I really want to thank the committee and Joe for asking me to do my primary purpose today, which is carry the message to the addicts still suffering or struggling. And what I've got to say first and foremost is the person sitting here today is not the person that came into these rooms on January 13th, 2005 via rehab in North London called the Priory Hospital, where I was introduced to recovery. So as you can tell from my accent, I'm not originally from Australia, although I've been here 13 years, and I'll go into that in a moment. But I'll share, as the big book asked me to, what I used to be like, what happened and what it's like today. But before I begin on that, let me just read you for today's December 26th from A Quiet Peace, just the first part, my journey. Very apt. Throughout this journey, I have seen miracles. I have seen the desire and obsession to use remove not only in my life, but also in the lives of countless others. I have witnessed hopelessness turn to hope and onto joy in the lives of so many of those around me. I know this gift is precious, and keeping it relies on my of being of service and continue to work the 12-step on a daily basis. What I used to be like. So way before I picked up any substance or drink or anything else, as a little kid, I had this over-sensing feeling of separateness, riddled with fear, disconnection, a dad who drank and caused mayhem, and I didn't want to be dad. And I couldn't put words to how I felt, but I just felt this alienation growing up just in a town outside North London called Henry Hempstead. And that was just where I am from. But there was just this feeling of alienation and disconnection. And on a school trip, can't remember where it was, I wanted to fit in, so I took a drink, and I loved the effect it gave me. As our big book says, I love the effect it produced, and I realised why Dad drank, you know, and it did for me what I can never do for myself, and that quickly spiralled into other substances, namely cocaine, and there's this whole late 80s, and we were going out to raves. I just heard you talking about certain names, and I was like, oh, yeah, remember all of that stuff, and but my drinking and drugging was off the charts, you know. And people used to say to me right from the off, what's the matter with you? And I couldn't tell them, because I would just do what I wanted to do, you know, and I'd disappear. I'd just be on this cycle. And basically, you know, I was completely powerless. I couldn't put words to it at that time, but I was powerless. I had this complete mental obsession. And when I took a drink or a substance, or for me, gambling as well, anything to change the way I felt, set off this phenomenon of craving. And the second part of that first step is that my life is unmanageable, and every aspect of my life was unmanageable. Relationships, couldn't balance the checkbook, was always robbing, thieving, cheating, lying, not just money, but people's time, emotions and everything else. And I was completely selfish and self-centered, but I couldn't see it because I'm in this delusional lifestyle. And I won't go into too much details, but for 19 years, I operated this way in this cycle of addiction. I didn't know I was an addict. I just thought my life was normal, actually, to a certain point, you know, because everyone could get effed, to be honest. And that's how I operated, because riddled with this fear that I had, I had chronic low self-worth, low self-esteem, but a lot of anger. I internalized that anger. By this time in my early 20s, I knew there was something inherently wrong with my drinking and drugging. I went to some counselors and doctors and psychiatrists at the time, but I drink and use before I saw them and after. And I was unable to be honest, you know. I was never honest, you know, and because I was just consumed by my disease, which I didn't know I had a disease called addiction. And, you know, this cycle happened throughout my 20s, and my late 20s, this is when none of it was working, but I still went back to it. I was starting to get suicidal ideation. I remember being in the fetal position at the end of a spree and ringing the helplines. I think when I was in London, it was the Samaritans, and just talking to someone because I was wanting to end my life, you know. And the interesting thing is that December 2004, I'll just sort of fast forward, I tried. So that's 16 years ago. But all I can say now is that God had a much better plan for me, you know. And God said, no, you're not going. It was around about this time I went to see the psychiatrist at the Priory, and he said I needed to go in straight away. He said, you're very, very sick. You need to come in. I didn't that Christmas. My sobriety date's January 13th, 2005. Do you know what I did? I thought I knew better, or I just had this lot of fear and control. And I just went on a bender that Christmas and New Year. And funny enough, I was telling people when I was on that bender that I was going to go to rehab. I was there was some part of me that the seed had been sown. And so I drove myself to the Priory on January 13th, 2005, and I entered there. And I thought for 28 days they were going to sort of give me some pills or techniques or something to control, and by using and techniques for life and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, because I'd had some previous sessions around CBT. I thought, oh, it's all about that stuff. And so anyway, no. When I got in there, it was explained to me that I had an illness called addiction. There was no cure for addiction. We're a 12-step based facility, and it's mandatory for you to go to the meetings in the art block associated with that rehab. And they were obviously run independently. And my very first meeting was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting. I want to thank a lot of my brothers and sisters. We're still on this journey from that. First speaker I heard was Carpet Michael. And I sat at the back and I was scared. I remember shuffling in there, couldn't look anyone in the eye. getting emotional because these people saved my life. You know, I had this beautiful thing when Michael shared, and then other people shared in that meeting, which was identification of one addict talking to another. I identify with your drinking and your drugging, your thinking and your behavior. I said, that's me. That's me. Because a wise person, as I entered that facility and I entered that meeting, said, listen to similarities and not differences. And I'm so grateful that that person did that. And the great thing was, in that very first meeting, I got this great thing called hope, because I was hopeless. It was almost like a little spiritual moment. And that group really became my home group. And I asked my first sponsor, Joel, he's still around, to be my sponsor in my third week of treatment there. And in the CA meeting, I went up to him afterwards on that Friday night. And Friday night CA meeting in Southgate was quite a big meeting. It was for newcomers. And but I was still scared and I was still broken. I was 3 weeks in, but I knew I had to start the work, and through the big book. And I just want to say all these guys are on fire through the big book around Southgate and Palmer's Green, North London. The reason was, in 2004, just to put some historic context into it, they had some great speakers come over from the States in Bournemouth 2004 convention, which lit all these guys up who carried the message to me. And those speakers were Earl H., Chris Raymer, Ralph W., and I was actually given their CDs in my early weeks of treatment and to listen to. And that's how old it goes, it's CDs, right? So I'm so grateful because these guys were on fire with it. And Joel asked me two questions. He said, Sanjay, have you had enough? I'd had enough. I'm in the nut house for 28 days. In fact, 31 days. I'll talk about that in a moment. And are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over addiction, alcoholism? And I said, yes. He said, great. Read the first 103 pages and tell me you want to do that work. You know, and then I wanted to do, I would have done anything at that time, you know, and he opened up his house to me to go there, and we commenced the work through the big book, you know, and I still have my original copy that the Priory gave me, and in there I've written my sobriety date. The first thing Joel did was give me the promise. It says the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism addiction. He gave me that promise. He said, you do this work, you will get recovered through a spiritual experience. And then what I want you to do is go and help others, right? And that was a message that was carried to me. And I'm so grateful for that, because we commenced the work, you know, step one, you know, which is the first 60 odd pages, which asks me that one question: do you lose power, choice, control every single time? Great things I identified with in that book was, in doctor's opinion, being irritable, restless, and discontent. Again, listening to similarities or looking at the similarities in this book, I identified being maladjusted to life. I identified with the, you know, with the no mental defense. Any day I pick up, doesn't really matter, right? I always wanted to drink and use, you know, because I had to change the way I felt. Being inside this skin, I just could not sit still. I had this noise in my head, which is what I call my addiction. The noise in my head just wouldn't shut up. You know, I remember once, and then I went to Joel's house and did the third step prayer. He had two big Alsatian dogs, which sort of helped me get on my knees. But I remember doing it and felt another little spiritual moment. It got a little bit easier. And just to let you know, I was literally taking it an hour at a time, not even a day at a time. I was that fragile when I came in. I couldn't even speak. The format of the meetings in the UK are obviously you jump in and share. I couldn't even do that. Even when they had the 10 minutes at the end for shy sharers and newcomers, I couldn't even do that. I was so broken. So broken. It's funny that I can, you know, I get asked to speak now and I find it uncomfortable, but that's taken a lot of work. In those first few months, I was just broken. But I literally took it an hour at a time, and you know, I did the third step prayer, and immediately Joel gave me the step four sheets. He didn't shy away from what it says in the book. He said, next we launched. And, you know, he gave me the sheets. He said, there you go, let's do it. And I sort of procrastinated on doing my step four for about 3 weeks. Then I rang my mate, and by this time, just to pedal back, some good brothers of mine now, Paul and Adam, they originally came to the rehab with their big books, and they're only 6 months into the work. That's how on fire these guys were with the big book recovery. And Paul's become a good brother of mine, and Adam has as well. They're all coming up to 16, 17 years now. And I rang Paul. I said, Paul said to me, have you done your step four? And I said, no, I haven't. He says, if you don't finish it, I'm not going to speak to you. I went, oh, fuck. All right. And, you know, it was just needed. I just needed that. And what was happening, there was a bit of a crew around Southgate that we'd go to the meeting on a Friday night, we'd go to the meeting on a Sunday, and we'd go and have coffees and pizzas and things like that. And we had a kind of a running crew. And that's what happens, you know, when Paul said that, I wanted to finish it. And there was a convention in Brighton in April 2005, April the 2nd and the 3rd, where I shared with Joel my step five after I finished that step four. And by this time I'd written loads of stuff, you know, and I was never going to tell somebody this stuff, you know. And you know, I'd made that third step decision. What I understand now, that I had to unblock myself through steps 4 through 2 9. And I sat on Brighton Beach in that April in 2005, and I looked at Joel, and I started to read out my step four and share it in step five. And I started weeping. I was telling him things I would never tell. I was never going to tell a human soul. You know, my resentments, my harms, my fears and everything else. And he just said, look at the last column, you know, and we went through it, and he identified where he could, and he shared some of his stuff. And this was the most beautiful experience that I ever had. And you know, I went home from that convention on Sunday night on April the 3rd, and what happened was that It says, be quiet for an hour in the book, returning home. I didn't have a shelf, but I left it on the floor. I didn't put the TV on because I wanted to watch Top Gear. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to do what the book told me to do. And I opened up the book and it says, try to make more without sand, all that kind of stuff, and first five steps. And I've been really thorough and honest for the first time in my life. I did the step seven prayer. And a beautiful thing happened, which I now know that's been powering me through nearly 16 years, which was the noise in my head stopped. I had a spiritual awakening. I rang Paul. I said, Paul, the noise has stopped. And he said, welcome. You know, and I knew my life was never going to be the same again because I felt this peace come over inside, you know, and my externals hadn't changed. My family didn't want to know me. I was still masses in debt. I was living in a little flat in Walthamstow and everything hadn't changed from the external stuff, but inside I felt this peace. And I just became active in the fellowship, you know. And I remember setting up a meeting in Boreham Wood. I remember putting out chairs on the Tuesday night at Palmer's Green. I just got active. Because Joel said, you know, when you get this, when you've had a spiritual experience, your job is to carry the message to somebody else. And I went through the rest of the steps, you know, and made the amends and the continuance of 10, 11 and 12, you know. And that first year was building a foundation of recovery, and it was a strong one. And, you know, it was fun. We took, I always say this, you know, that hotbed of CA in North London in around, I remember when we went to this convention in Scotland with a group of us, and went to different meetings all over South and North London. It was quite an exciting time. And you know, Scouse Port was part of our crew. And I want to acknowledge all these people and brothers and sisters that, you know, made it fun, but we took the work seriously, but we didn't take ourselves too seriously, you know. And and that spirit was quite unique, and we're still around. There's still about 6, 7, 8, 9 of us still, you know. Joel's still around, Paul's still around, Adam's still around, Oz, great brother, friend of mine, busted, you know. And they're setting up meetings everywhere and doing God's work, you know. That's what happened. And we're on fire with this stuff. So that first year was just building a big foundation of my recovery. I was just going to work and doing this and doing the 12th step and taking people through the book and everything else. Well, my story is that obviously I ended up in Australia, but you know, that was through a set of circumstances. I remember I still had some other stuff to deal with, which is nothing to do with addiction, but trauma related stuff through the priory. And I remember going back to see my lead therapist, and she said, you know, part of your amends might be to go back to your heritage where you came from. And so I went to India, and anyway, went on holiday, and I found, you know, for my 11th step, you know, some spiritual practices that helped me to connect and everything else. At the same time, though, I also met a young lady from Australia, fell in love, and cut a long story short, you know, we were married within the year, and at 2 years and a few months, I moved to Australia. You know, and I remember talking to my brothers and sisters in the fellowship at the time and saying, oh, what shall I do? And, you know, and they said, you know, if you're happy, this is about living life now. You know, I didn't want to leave my crew in North London, but they said, if you're happy, you got to follow your heart. And so I followed my heart, and I moved here in 2007. And when I moved here, there was no CA. So the first thing I did was set up the CA helpline. You know, and I've been in Melbourne ever since, and I've always run that helpline. It's my phone number on the website, and you know, and I just carried the message. I had a meeting going on a Tuesday night, and had the literature sent out me from the CA UK team, and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, found a home group through the Mother Fellowship of AA, and just commenced the work again, and I'd like to say that my story is, you know, all one way beautiful thing up, but it's not. You know, I had a daughter born in 2009. She's a direct result of me getting well and recovery and everything else. But I remember I didn't immediately get a local home group for a couple of years when I was here in Australia. I was doing the CA meeting and stuff, but I was trying to run it for my first experience. And I was running rough around 4 or 5 years and, you know, a bit irritable and restless and discontent again. And what happened was that, my marriage ended in 2012, 8 years ago. And I was in the fetal position again. I went straight to kind of suicidal ideation. Didn't think about taking a drink or a drug. You know, that wasn't on the cards because my foundation was strong around that stuff. But I was in pain again. And the person sitting here today has been shaped through the anvils of pain. It's only through pain that I grow. I remember crying out and speaking to my old buddies and speaking to my new sponsor here and a few other people, and they said, just get back to basics. And that's what I did. And I started just taking people back through the book again, keeping it really simple. Because that's what worked the first time, right? You know, so that happened. And then my dad died of alcoholism a few years ago. And I was able to become a brother and a son and everything else that the book tells me I should be, you know. And I've been very active in the fellowships here as well to, you know, so I've tried just doing the recovery portion, but I need to do all three. I need to do the recovery unit in service. Because for me, when I don't do the other stuff, I run rough. I do. The head goes off. I'm not plugged in. And so I need to do all three of that stuff, you know. And my story is that, you know, I've been trudging this road now. God willing, in January 13th, it'll be 16 years. And it's the Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous that sent me on this path. And I'm really, really, and I always say this now recently, that I didn't come to CA to find God, but God found me. Because I've been saved and I don't know why. But actually, no, I do know why. I do know why, because the book says it really clearly on page 60 of, you know, that we are his agent. I'm his agent today, and all this stuff was alien to me. I came in totally anti-religious, nothing to do with spirituality, and but here I am now. Just every day I have to do what the person who's 16 hours has to do. Forget time. Every day on a daily basis, I have to get on my knees and I pray and I meditate. In the beginning, that was like, you know, trying to do 10 seconds in the shower and go off and go on my day. It doesn't work for me anymore. I have to really sit down and pray and meditate. I have to be part of a regular home group. So on Wednesdays and Sundays, I'm part of a group. I have to take people through the book. I've got two new sponsees and I'm taking the book through this week. I just have to be active. That's my recovery today, you know. And that in return, I get a beautiful life, and I go back through the steps, and I travel. I'm a salesman with my day job, and you know, I travel around. And when I'm traveling, I always plug into whether it's CA or AA. And this year's been an interesting one because you can plug in any time of the day, right? The technology allows you to do it, which is great. But I am a face-to-face person. I want to see the whites of your eyes. I want to feel the energy of a room. So I think all the technology is really complementary. I think it's a great way to carry the message. But I don't think it can beat the face-to-face stuff. When you're taking somebody through the work, you know, and that's just my experience and my opinion on that. But, you know, I'm eternally grateful to the people in Cocaine Anonymous that carried the message to me all the way back in 2005, because I would not be sitting here. I want to thank those speakers that came out and fired up the original crew. I understand now that CA UK has just absolutely flourished since I've been away for 13 years. It's been amazing to see it grow. And, you know, there is a meeting here. A fellow called Darren set up in the Gold Coast a Wednesday night Zoom meeting for Big Book Study. And when I can, early next year, we'll go back to face-to-face meetings here down in Melbourne. Hopefully we'll see meetings in Sydney and Brisbane, you know, because it's needed. Big Book recovery is needed, you know, and I'm so, so grateful to be, you know, sitting here free. Because I was told, you know, when I said to Joel once, I was moaning, whining. I said, oh, is this going to be church halls, community centres the rest of my life? Because if it is, you can stick it. I'm a bit angry, a bit tetchy. And he smiled and he opened up the book and he said, what does that say? He said, it said, you know, paraphrasing, he said, you can go on this earth for free, man. You can go to the most sordid place on earth, as long as you're in fit spiritual condition, right, kind of thing. Ah, he said, Sanjay, this is about freedom. How free do you want to be? And I wanted to be free. I wanted to be free from the bondage of all of that stuff. And my real problem, as it says in the book, is selfishness. When I wake up, it's on, right? So I, as I said, I have to do what the person who's one day has to do, exactly the same program. It's on a daily basis. Yes, I am today recovered from the hopeless condition of mind and body, but I'm not cured. That's why I'll keep coming back. And thanks for letting me share. I think I've been about half an hour, but God bless you all. And thank you. Have a great one.